you've been listening to the CBC lately, you may have caught an interview with the author Margaret Visser. She's had a recently released book entitled The Gift of Thanks, and it intrigued me so much that I had to buy it, and I normally don't buy brand new books. She details, and I do mean she gives the nitty-gritty, all the bloody details, on the idea of thanks. She is a social scientist. She has researched how thanks and gratitude work and play out in our culture. She compares it to historical models and to other cultures. I shall not try to summarize 400 pages of detail here. Suffice it to say that we have cultural norms about how and when to say thank you and to whom. Language reflects the particular culture out of which it comes. Different cultures have varying degrees of thankfulness or gratitude, and the emotions which underlie the words, as well as how verbal they are about it. We probably know some of this, at least for our culture, even if we don't have all the details right on our tongues. I want to say something about gratitude today. Visser writes, "Gratitude is a feeling that depends on thinking. It is ignited in the receiver's heart not only by another kind of action, but also by his or her attention, awareness, understanding, reflection, and openness to seeing and accepting the goodness of somebody else. When the receiver becomes in turn a giver, this feeling of gratitude develops into a pivot between the first favor and the next. It begins as a reaction and a recognition, and then, after further reflection, turns into a motivator. The fact that gratitude is an emotion helps it to motivate. In conjunction with thinking, it produces a decision. The operation might be mysterious, but the word gratitude does not refer only to the action of giving something back in itself. Giving back is showing gratitude for the benefactor to see and perhaps for others to see as well. The real gratitude, the motive for returning a favor, lies hidden in the heart and therefore requires verbal expression as well as an appropriate externalization in action." Visser is reminding us that saying thank you is part of the oil that lubricates human interaction, especially when someone has imposed on others to perform some act. Thanking them for the favor helps repair that small social rift. A simple thanks is the most casual and most intimate of responses. A more formal expression of thanks is a giving back for the favor rendered, an acknowledgement of the imposition. While today we are not always as formal as in the past, even now, saying thank you and giving back are social acts with desirable consequences that include the goodwill and the cohesion of the group. Visser goes on to say that after not thanking and not giving in return, especially after receiving a considerable favor, if you don't thank, you can cut links, discourage giving, and hurt feelings. The more you think about what has been done for you, the more grateful you become. And so I, too, am going to say thank you for all of the host committee for the regional fall gathering that happened just last weekend. Yes, there's already been some thank yous, both last Sunday and this Sunday. I figure we can't say it enough. And I have a card of thanks, something tangible, something you can keep. Yeah, I keep the cards that I get. I put them in a file labeled me. It's true, I take them out only once, very occasionally. But every once in a long while, I need to remember that someone cares about the work I do and the trouble I've gone to. I know it's healthier if I don't have to depend on people saying thank you every time I do something right, but at times I need it. So there I have it in writing, and I can remember. It's not like it's hard to say thank you for the work of the host committee. The conference went off very well indeed. Thanks not only to the hard work, but to the smart work of quite a number of people. Let me also say that the members of the host committee were assisted by a number of others who helped make it all happen, and I can't list them all. But on behalf of all of Beacon, I'm representing Beacon here, I want to say a special thanks to the host committee. You probably know that Donatella Klingo and Donna Hamilton were co-chairs. I think that Don Hawke originally planned to be right in there, but work intervened. Between the two of them, or maybe it was really three, I know Don put his two cents in occasionally. The meetings were organized, and so were all the many, many details. Hugh Morrison, currently visiting in New Zealand, kept formal track of the money. Kay Norton not only identified some wonderful music for the choir to sing, but got our choir up to speed and then expanded it into a workshop for the Saturday. John Slattery, who's in Calgary today, organized all the details of the worship service, setting up the aesthetics and making sure all the little things that I take for granted were there, like the collection baskets and the matches and the chalice. Joyce Silver organized the children's program. Ah, such a short sentence, but such a large task. Joan Morris and Karen Greenland liaised with the workshop presenter and made sure that they were introduced and thanked and had all the stuff they needed. Darcy Greenland made sure something happened for the young adults and contributed to the worship as well. David Hamilton not only provided a lot of music, but made the registration happen. I can't believe how many details need to be looked after for registration. Carol Becken found billets for those needing them. I can't thank you all enough. And I was only another member of the host committee, although I'm going to put my CUC hat back on and thank you for the Canadian Unitarian Council. As minister of this congregation, I feel not so much a sense of ownership, but a sense of identification with Beacon, and so for Beacon, I want to say thank you to this committee. Thank you, all of us. I'm overwhelmed many times by the amount of organizing this congregation is able and willing and able to do well. I speak about gratitude today because I think it might be a spiritual discipline that we could adopt. Many of us have ideas about how we think about God and human nature and death. We have our own, at least tentative, answers to the big questions of life. But I think the biggest question is, how do I live my faith? What do I do that reminds me I'm spiritual or religious? What do I do that reminds me that I work to maintain the ties that bind us together? A practice of gratitude is one answer to this question. Religion helps us make meaning of our feelings of awe and wonder that we experience, whether at the sight of a baby learning something new yet again, or at the sight of Mount Baker peeking out through the clouds, all dusted with last night's snow. Galen Gugerich, writing in the UU World, reminds us that religion begins as transcendence, that's the part about God, but then leads to a discipline of the faith. We Unitarians don't often emphasize any particular spiritual discipline, but it seems to me that if religion is to be more than an academic exercise or merely a mind game, then we have to figure out how to live our religion. What is our attitude to life in general and to my particular circumstances? Gugerich says, and I'm going to quote him for a bit here, "In the same way that Judaism is defined by obedience, Christianity by love and Islam by submission, I believe that Unitarian Universalism could be defined by gratitude. Why gratitude? Two dimensions of gratitude make it fitting as our defining religious practice. One has to do with a discipline of gratitude, and the other with an ethic of gratitude. The discipline of gratitude reminds us how utterly dependent we are on the people and world around us for everything that matters. From this flows an ethic of gratitude that obligates us to create a future that justifies an increasing sense of gratitude from the whole human family. The ethic of gratitude demands that we nurture the world that nurtures us in return. It is our duty to foster the kind of environment that we want to take in and therefore become. The two forms gratitude takes in our lives, a discipline and an ethic, are natural outcomes of the two elements of religious experience, awe and obligation. The experience of awe leads to the discipline of gratitude, and the experience of obligation leads to an ethic of gratitude. Religion is about that which binds us together. What is it that we have in common and therefore form a bond? The answer is that we cannot live in isolation. We live in relationship all of the time. Each of us is a product of those relationships and how they influence our lives, our choices, and our well-being. My father had this wonderful question. Well, how different your life would have been if you had married somebody else? I dated another guy before. What would life have been like if you'd married Joel, who was Jewish? Of course, any different decision in my life would have meant different relationships, from partner to mother-in-law to work colleagues. I probably would have lived in a very different place, too. It's all related. It's easy enough to neglect these dependencies we have, to think that we make our decisions, even about our own lives, on our own, or are entirely self-reliant. It's true, many of us live on our own. I don't see the members of my family of origin all that often, but I realize that I am reminded of them by something in every room of my house. I have hanging in my house needlework done by my mother, my sister, my niece, my mother-in-law. I have plates that hung in my paternal grandmother's kitchen, the kitchen table that my maternal great-grandmother received as a wedding present, and then was refinished by my father. Al's artwork is lying all over the place, both in the way and in a way most delightful. It brings comment by visitors to the house and passing motorists. Yes, they see it and they stop, screech, look in his studio door and stop and talk. I am surrounded by very tangible evidence of my connections, all my relations. To quote Gugarich again, gratitude is a uniquely religious virtue because a sense of awe and a sense of obligation, religion's basic impulses, are both experiences of transcendence, of being part of something much larger than ourselves. The feeling of awe emerges from experiences of the grandeur of life and the mystery of the universe. We happen upon a sense of inexpressible exhilaration at being alive and a sense of utter dependence upon sources beyond ourselves. This sense of awe and dependence should prompt in us a discipline of gratitude. We need to constantly acknowledge that our present experience depends upon the sources that make it possible. The feeling of obligation lays claim to us when our sense of duty to the larger life we when we sense our duty to the larger life we share. As we glimpse our dependence upon other people and other things, we also glimpse our duty to them. This sense of obligation leads to an ethic of gratitude. Our experience of transcendence in the present works for a future in which all relationships among humans as well as between humans and the natural world are fair, constructive, and beautiful. Put another way, Gugarich continues, the discipline of gratitude connects the present with the past, while the ethic of gratitude connects the present with the future. Disciplines teach us who we are. They remind us of commitments we have made and show us the path to walk. When Muslims pray 5 times each day facing Mecca, they remember who they are as people of their faith. Of course, how you maintain an attitude of gratitude is your choice. Some people keep a gratitude journal, writing down the things, the people, and experiences for which they are grateful, perhaps for future reference. Others take a moment at mealtime or bedtime or meditation time to mentally take note of the abundance in their lives. Such attention prompts further and closer notice to all that we do have. I hope such attention to what you have will ease somewhat the fear and tension that has come along with the volatile financial situation out there, and maybe it's right in your home, too. The words of the song that the choir sang are exactly the prayer to end with. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for this time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day. I hope that your reflections on Beacon Unitarian Church and your gratitude for it will help you to support it in every way that you can, with your time and energy, with your financial contributions, and in your conversations with others outside the congregation. All these are giving back the gratitude for the abundance that Beacon is for us. Amen. Let us sing together hymn number 331, Life is the Greatest Gift of All. And I thank David for reminding me of this song. So let us stand and sing with gusto.
Life is the greatest gift of all.
I'd like to close with these words from Charles Howe. May we go forth from this place thankful for the life that sustains and renews us, and open to the grace that surrounds and surprises us. May we go forth with openness and with thanksgiving.